Hello, welcome to Shift and Steer podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Aaron Hagar. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. We're down a man. And it's
Yeah.
funny because I think you and I are the ones injured, but we're down a man in Brad, who's the only physically capable one of moving around.
He's doing stuff. He's
He's
busy.
actually doing stuff because he
He's
can
got
do
his
stuff.
arms and legs for now.
Yeah,
For
for
now.
now, but you never know. Brad's getting there. Brad's getting there. And Brad, he keeps trying to attempt to get into vintage BMX riding. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure? Because
That's
he
what I
did
mean
it,
for now.
yeah, for now. Because he did it a year ago, and he's like, I'm so sore. I go, maybe just collect the bikes instead of getting back on and riding the bikes. But he was so into it back in the day, flipping up in the air and all the jumps. Like when he was a young and spry man, he was
I
an
don't
avid
know. He
BMXer.
talks a big talk, but I have yet to see solid proof because there's never like something on the ground. It's just him in the air,
In the
and
air.
it's cropped real tight.
And with AI these days, I don't know. Yeah,
Know the edges are kind of soft. I don't know.
I'm
He
just
had he did
saying.
have six fingers, so.
And it looks like someone on a BMX bike flipped upside down with like a picture, like a Polaroid of Brad's face taped into the helmet. That would be funny if he did that one. That would
See
be
some
funnier.
edges.
Yeah, it'd be funny if he did that. All right, so before we get
We should have
started,
Rick do some Photoshop.
yeah, Rick would be great at it.
I'm on the moon.
Our friends at BetOnline, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. From baseball and golf to soccer and all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing, they have every stat, every matchup, even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with over 150 different slot games. Just head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus off your first deposit. It's BLEAV. Off for your That's the code for your 50% welcome bonus. Bet online, the game starts here. Okay, so we mentioned last week that you fumbled a little bit, and now we've got the photographic proof. Is this where it happened? I'm looking at a couple images online here.
Yeah, so Jocelyn Snow is a good friend of mine, and on a blog. Oh, okay. I was gonna say what? It's out in the world. And she's an amazing, motorrad rider. She used to work where she's at Rawhide, and now she's got her own independent program for motorcycle riding, for adventure riding.
Okay.
She's ridden all over the world. She's won the Motorrad and Tour Tech event. She's really a talented individual. She rides those big old BMW GSs at a mere 5'1". She's a
Yeah.
little teeny tiny woman, and she's doing great things for women around the world that are kind of petite and short and want to get on these big bikes and go around the world. So she's trained a lot of people. It's open to the public, but it's kind of an invitational private thing. It's small groups. Anyway, well, we did it through So-So Cycles, and a great time. So I got that Norton 901, and I didn't touch it. I rode it home, had 14 miles on it or something, and I'm like, I haven't ridden in 2 years. Let's go do something stupid. So I go to the school, and it's amazing how much you learn. I've been riding all my life, like literally all my life. I've done hundreds of thousands of miles off road, and I've been an adventure rider forever. And I joked when I got there and said, okay, I'm here to prove that I have no talent. All these years I've been riding with no talent, and I'm here to discover that and move forward. And I realized that I look down. I mean, I look down. Everywhere I go, I look down. I look down when I walk. I look down when I bicycle. I look down when I roller skate. I look down when I ski, and I crash, and I fumble, and I'm awkward, and I'm never in a comfort zone that I want to be in. I've been on the racetrack and in cars, and I find that I'm clumsy, and I always feel awkward, and then I'm never really symbiotic with the machine. And it's because I'm looking down. I'm always looking at the terrain and the environment. I'm looking for critters. I'm looking for little fun things, right? And I grew up in the mountains, and I do it when I hike. I mean, I stumble all the time because I'm looking at the ground, and that's a real problem. So I'm having a really hard time, and that caused me to crash a couple times. Simple stuff, but we were doing some sand training, and I stepped off the bike in the sand. No big deal, but I had my leg straight, and I had my knee locked, and so I exploded my knee. MCL, ACL, who knows what else. Looks like I have a severed ACL, but there's a lot of damage in there. And it's amazing because after a couple of days and all the bruising shows up and your whole leg is just bruised. And I'm going, I didn't hit anything. Like, yeah. I just landed on my leg straight and then stumbled over. But it's like, I didn't hit anything. How is it this bruised? And it's, you know, the trauma because of the injury is really, it's new for me and it's interesting, but it's going to be a bit of a recovery. So no motorcycles, no third pedal, no nothing. So it's a bummer. Waiting on insurance so I can go see my orthopedic surgeon and see what's really going on, get an MRI. Yeah. But I'm already having physical therapy. It's interesting because you have to do all this work to get ready for surgery. Like, you got to be at your best, almost better than I was before the injury going in. So you get the best results coming out. So that's what I'm working on now, twice a week. And yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, motorcycle is awesome. Performed beautifully. All the bikes are great. The school is amazing. I could have learned so much more had I gotten over this simple thing of looking down, and photos to prove it. All three times, going straight, making the turn. And then you see my eyes look down and I go right into what I'm looking at. I mean, literally, just it's like you're just glued to it. Bam.
And you know, like you said, you've been on the racetrack as well. Yeah. in cars and on motorcycles. And it's, yeah, always look ahead. Because if, yep, you're looking at what's in front of you, it's already past you.
Right? Yeah.
So then,
yeah,
you don't see which is why I was, one of those guys that, you know, jumped the turn at Laguna Seca, which I feel less badly about now, because I think two people did it in the IndyCar this past weekend at Laguna Seca.
I
did it in a Lexus and an ISF years ago.
You know, it's true. In a car, I'm okay. I do well in a car, I guess, because I can't look down unless I'm looking at my feet, and that's not working.
Yeah.
But you put a GoPro on them and look later, you know, was I heel toeing, yeah, properly? Was I curling, you know? But yeah, anything on two wheels, it's a real interesting thing, or two legs. It's a real interesting thing. And I kind of discovered that at 54 years old, I discovered that all I do is look at the ground, because I'm looking for stuff. And it's really hard to look up. And that's why I've never had the confidence to look through the corner. And I never conditioned myself to do that. And but stepping off the bike was just a thing. It was just a small accident. I haven't been one of those athletic people that have done it during football or basketball or hockey or anything else. I'm not that kind of sports guy. So this was a new injury for me. It's pretty common, I guess. Everybody I know is like, oh yeah, I've done it four times, you know. Jocelyn's done it five times, you know. She's squatting on the ground and jumping all over things, and I'm like, well, you're clearly okay. She's like, oh yeah, you know, just do all the PT and you're fine. I'm like, all right.
Yes, it's like you said, because it's happened so often to so many people. Yeah. It's recoverable. But you didn't crash, you just kind of got off the bike the wrong way. You're kind of stepping down.
Yeah, well, no. I didn't crash violently. It's sand. It's 2 feet, yeah, deep sand. It's hell. And I was at first gear carrying some speed. But, you know, you get sloppy and you just have to let the bike move underneath you. But when I got sloppy, I pivoted and started to head towards the edge. And there's telephone poles lining the edge. And as the bike started to just dig into the sand, and then you carve the front end in, and then you go down, it would have been a real simple fall over and roll out. But where I was headed, I saw the telephone poles, and I'm like, and I might hit those with my head. You know, this is what goes on in your brain in a millisecond. You know, you're
Yeah,
like head
instantly.
injury on the telephone poles. I'm just going to run the throttle and see if I can clear them a little bit. And I think I remember maybe I could jump them. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
in your head, when you're on a dirt bike, you're like, oh, just lift the front end up and just go over it. You know, like if you can't, if instead of plowing into it, just go over it. They're logging your way, lift the front end, go over it. And so I'm thinking telephone pole, it's half buried in sand, 4 inches off the ground. I can go over that, but I was too far over. So when I folded the front end, I was like, oh, it's down. And now I need to escape the bike so I don't get pinned. So I literally just put my leg out and just kind of pushed off the bike a little bit. Like it was really no big deal, but I didn't land right. And the other two times I fell, I was on a downhill, sharp 90-degree left turn, real slow. But same thing. I saw rocks and I saw stuff and I just headed to it. And I just rolled off the bike. Like the bike fell over, I rolled off and rolled it out and stood up. It's no big deal. But yeah, it would have been no big deal, but I just happened to step off it. But I'll tell you, Jocelyn said, she told me to get rid of my adventure boots. She goes, those are great just for, you know, doing little things. But she goes, but this is a good school and you'll be pushing the limits of stuff you probably haven't done to this degree so that we can get you to the furthest degree of it. And then everything you do up to this, you know, won't seem as scary because a lot of this is just confidence. It's just confidence building. You have the, you know, you have the fundamentals, you have the skill set. You just may not be as confident to approach it. My philosophy in all this riding that I've ever done is as I crawl out of my hole in the morning, I put my gear on and I get on the bike and I ride and I do this day long ride, 400 miles. And when I come home, I put my cape away, you know, and it's like, you really start, I start from this place of fear and it takes me a whole day to kind of get over it. And that's because I never did take the fundamentals. I never went to a motorcycle school. I never learned from the best. I just kind of figured it out as I went. And I wasn't really doing it right. It worked for me, but it kind of didn't. And Jocelyn's a pro and her team, she had another 5 or 6 people there that were just so talented and had gone through her classes too. And so they were all very cohesive in their training and really, really a great program. I would encourage anybody that, you know, whether it's Rawhide or whether it's Jocelyn's school or any of these schools, find a school that you relate to. It's all pretty scary if you're kind of new. There was riders there that were a year riding. So one guy came and had never ridden off-road before. He just bought this bike and he killed it. He was one of the top riders. I mean, you just never know who you are sometimes until you get on these big adventure bikes and go through some training and do it. But
yeah,
and just, you know, I stepped off wrong and that's it. It's really simple. But I look forward to doing it again and getting back on the bike and doing Alaska next year. I still got that on my sights. I don't think
I was
going
to ask. I was like, is it going to put a damper on your long road trip?
It's a year from now and we're not doing hardcore off-roading. I mean, there'll be some dirt roads, but they're dirt roads. They're not single tracks, you know, and it's more of just a long ride, but I still have it on my sights. I mean, if I can't bend my knee and I can't do it to that degree that I want to, I might just grab a Ural or a you know, something with a sidecar, you know, I don't know. I'm not riding it off yet. You know, I didn't sell the bike. It's still sitting out front.
Yeah.
It's still dirty, but it's sitting out front. And I got to
say, but like you said, like go get it looked at as soon as you can and start addressing it sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Cause my thing too, is a lot of people postpone those types of surgeries. And just know the older we get, the healing process becomes slower. So I kind of look at things going, let's attack it now. Just kind of a thought, especially if you want to be able to continue to do things like this and do the
exactly.
Trip and,
yeah. And that was something I was considering. It's like, okay, so I ride motorcycles. I hike around a bit. I don't climb mountains anymore. It's just not interesting to me, but I do hike around a bit, especially adventuring. You know, I don't really ski anymore. I don't play ball sports. I don't run, you know, it's like I scuba dive. So I hike to the trails, just scuba dive sometimes to the water. I mean, it's like a bicycle, you know, it's like, I look at what I do and I'm like, it's kind of basic stuff. So do I need an ACL? It's actually on my mind. Do I need, you know, a year of rehab or 6 months of rehab, or can I just fix what I got? You know,
right. But in 10 years from now, when it becomes a real inconvenience and you realize it's affecting mobility and yeah, I don't exactly. know. I mean, I'm
well,
sure
well, you could wear down different. Other, like we discussed before the show, you can wear down other stuff in compensating for that injury. I can tell you my right leg, no joke, is 25% bigger than my left leg, because I had gout in my left foot for the last 3 months. So I was favoring my right leg anyway.
Yeah.
And then this happened and I was going up the stairs the other day. My wife starts laughing. She's like, your ankle and calf are like a third smaller than your right one. She's like, you have all this definition in your ankle and your left one. I'm like, well, the right one's compensating, so it's building, and the left one's got a little atrophy, so it's fading. So I have to do all these exercises.
No, wait,
but yeah, it's noticeably different.
The bum knee, is that the same? Is that the gout leg?
Yes, which is all taken care of. Allopurinol.
Okay, but I don't know why you keep ruining that side of your body. Why don't you switch to the other side? Start to even out a little bit.
It rotates. For the last year and a half before that, it was my right leg. It was my right foot.
Maybe you hurt the knee because you had no muscle left in that leg when you went down.
You know what? That's a thing. But I was going to say too, Jocelyn told me to get some motocross boots, is what I was getting at before.
Yeah.
And I got to say, the motocross boots saved it, because I think the angle that I landed, I would have rolled my ankle. You know, if I was wearing a softer boot, motocross boots are very rigid on the side. They flex front and a little to back, but they don't rock left to right to save your ankle. And I think I would have folded my ankle too, because it's a little fragile from gout and stuff. I'm only a couple months out of, you know, not having gout. So, you know, I might have some calcification there. I don't know. But yeah, I think that injury could have been so much worse if I wasn't wearing a very rigid boot. So I am so glad I got some Alpenstar Tech 7s, and I'm really, really glad I did that.
Yeah, it's good. You got to have the right gear.
Yeah. No, we're armored up, but I got to say, you know, I had a climb jacket and a climb pants and a Revit jacket and a climb helmet. And
which is good, because at the next, like stuff. Supercross event, you can wear all that crap, and you can be one of those people in the audience that wears stuff, all that crap.
Different stuff. I'm going to add some really good knee braces, coming up here, some Levitts or something, or Liat. But other than that, the gear is good. Like even the times I went down on the hard stuff, I just rolled it off with no injuries, no bumps. I had one bruise on my leg because I bumped the handlebar on the roll. But it's amazing, the gear. And it's just that, what do they call it, D3 or D2? It's that orange. It's almost like a rubbery silicone feeling stuff, you know, that they put inside jackets and pants. Have you ever come across that stuff?
No,
it's like this weird orangey safety stuff. Here, to talk for a second, I'll grab it. Here, this stuff.
You can take through your gear. Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah, no, I've seen that.
So,
yeah,
I'm showing a knee pad. So yeah, it doesn't say what it is, but yeah,
it's flexible but dense, because they make it a little thinner now. Yeah.
D30 is what this one is. So it's like, it's one of those, it's one of those things where you can roll it up and into the size of, you know, a pencil. But when you slap yourself with it, it turns hard. It's very interesting that the way the technology works. It's like that cool sand, you know, that if you stand in it, you sink, but you can run across it and it stays hard. It's like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if I hit the table, it's hard, but yeah, it takes a blow. Anyway, this stuff is just amazing. I'm all in love with this stuff. I got a whole bag of it over there. Literally.
You're going to put it all on your body like a suit of armor now.
I'm going to put it all back in the gear that I took it out of. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, all right. Well, the school sounds like fun, and you're right. Like, get the right gear, get the proper, you know, education on those types of things. But the same for cars or anything.
Absolutely.
And anything. Down here, I noticed a similar program for mountain biking. They're like, we're going to show you how to mountain bike. And I never really thought about, like, doing a mountain biking school. And I was like, that's a really smart idea.
Yeah, Don't Look Down. I bet it's a lot of the same principles.
That's probably the name of the school, Don't Look Down.
Don't Look Down. It's really interesting because we used a bicycle in part of the demo. And yeah, if you're leaning off-road, you don't lean with your downhill foot. You know, when you're on a racetrack, you're leaning down into the corner, right? You're down into the bike. But when you're off-road, you're on the outside weight. And it was really cool because if you take a bicycle and you lean it, let's say to the left, and you grab the left hand lower handlebar and push on it, it just slides right out from under you. I mean, you could do it with two fingers. But if you grip the top handlebar away from the ground, you can put all your weight into it and it doesn't move.
Yeah.
The thing is just solid against the ground. And it's really interesting how the physics work. So yeah, go take a mountain bike class, because off-road, whole different ball game. Whole different ball game. It's really, really interesting to learn technique. Absolutely. How to land, how to let your body, you know, take the motion, how to lean back going downhill and lean forward going uphill, or whatever it is, you know, whatever it is you have to learn. We've all learned bad habits. And if you think about it, in our generation, mountain biking was invented in our generation, you know, us Gen Xers. So, you know, they're learning more about this stuff, the technology and this stuff and how it's evolved. There's different techniques of using it that we're not aware of, because we grew up skateboarding as well. You know, that there's, I'm sure there's tons of technique and physics and skateboarding and anything that's evolved in our generation. So those of us that have been doing it for a long time probably haven't been doing it right. And we're not doing it right for how it's evolved. So yeah, go out and educate yourself, no matter what age you are, no matter how long you've been doing something, because things have really changed. It's awesome. Just awesome. I love it. I love it. I love the journey. Even with an injury. Big deal. I love the journey.
Tape it up. You're fine.
Oh, you should see some of the hardware I've got, man.
Yeah. I'm sure braces and wraps and all kinds of things.
With this, I can climb the side of buildings.
Yeah.
With this, I can sleep.
Speaking of off-road, if you guys are fans of old school of rallying, like 1980s rally cars, Group B rally cars, if you think of the first generation Ford Escort and that the RS200, very cool car, big bug eyes in the front.
So cool.
There's a company in London, I believe, that is looking to do like reimaginations, if you will, taking a term from our friends at Singer. This company called Borum Motorworks is looking to sort of rebuild the first generation Escort and the RS200, those Group B rally cars. They just kind of teasing it, sort of silhouette of cars under these car covers. You can see some modern day LED lights, but you see some bigger fender flares and stuff on it. Now, I don't know exactly if these are meant to be street legal cars or not, but I guess we'll find out pretty soon if they're going to just be like track cars or not. But they're going to be limited production. I'm not sure how this group is. I don't know much about the inner workings of this group and who it's backed by, but they seem to have Ford's blessing on getting it done. I don't know what engines or drivetrain they're going to be using. I think that Escort was a little 1.1 liter back in the day. So I would imagine they're going to do something massive like 1.3 liters. I can't say for sure, but you know, those cars have really kind of gone up, you know, like the RS200. There was an evolution version that sold, I don't know, it was like $600,000 at RM auction. If I remember correctly, Ken Block had one of these, years ago when I was filming a show at Tim Allen's collection, and he had one as well. And his was all like opened up. They were doing some work on it. So the front clamshell, the engine was all kind of exposed. They were doing some work on it. And that was just a cool car. And then the Escort is actually cool. So if you kind of like the Datsun 510, The first gen Escort is sort of the Ford version of that. It kind of looks a little like that. And it's a cool looking car. And actually, one of the cars in Adam Carolla's collection, I think, is a 74 Ford Escort that Paul Newman raced. That
Oh,
we
so cool.
found. It's one of these cars that I found years ago, and this nice gentleman, Ross, was an older guy, and he was still vintage racing it, and he liked it, and he reached out, and he's like, I can't race this thing forever, and when I'm ready to hang up my driving gloves, if you guys are interested in the car, let me know. And I said, we're absolutely interested, and just keep us in mind, please don't sell it without letting us know. And years went by, and then someone reached out, and in fact, pretty sure somebody reached out on his behalf like during COVID, and he's like, he's in his 80s now, and with COVID he's not going out to these events, doesn't want to do it. And then at some point I think Ross passed away, and the guy reached out, and he was like, I've got a directive from the estate that you were the first people to reach out to. And I said, well,
Oh,
thank you
that's
very much.
cool.
And we were able to make a deal on the car, and Adam's got it in his collection, but it's a cool looking piece for sure.
They really are. You know, all those rally cars were the Lancia Stratos, you know, the little Citroen, the Mini Coopers, of course. I mean, you know, rally racing has always yielded the coolest little compact hatchbacks. And like, what is it? The Renault, which is the Renault. The Lancia Stratos, and there was a Renault. I forget what the Renault was, but there was the coolest Renault too. And if you look at these cars, they're so small. Like, you don't realize how small they are. And then you go to get in it, and you're like, I can't do that with a bum knee. I mean, it's like I can't
I
put
can
my
barely
knee to
do it
my
with regular
chest.
knees.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, they are really small cars. I would guess the Ford is like that too.
And
Incredibly small inside.
the Newman Escort is cool because it's got a little a Cosworth engine in it.
Yeah.
And it sounds good. It winds out
I
pretty
bet.
good. And
I bet.
interesting, I want to say it's like a cam driven fuel pump, and
Oh,
it's like a
probably.
shaft over the top of the engine, four cylinder,
Oh, wow.
from the
Interesting.
back to the front. And it's interesting. It's got a little tiny cog belt. It's like a shaft going to a belt, to a pulley with a belt. And it's like I'd have to look. Bring up those pictures again, but I remember when we had it over there in the collection. I remember when we got it and we fired it up and drove it off the trailer. Yeah, it's got some cool pieces on it.
Trying to find it right now. That stuff is so cool. I love the racing tech, you know. It's sometimes it's the solutions are so simple but so clever, you know. Oh yeah, those are beautiful engines. Wow. BDG. Oh, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah,
Cool
so
stuff.
I
I
don't
love the rally world. Just so cool. Such cool
I
stuff.
I don't know that you guys are gonna get the sound or anything if we show this, but there is a video that I think I put, I don't know if it's on CarCast or on my page on Facebook page, but you see that up here, and this is, I think this is when they were like sending us the car, delivering the car.
Oh wow, look at that.
But
Yeah,
look
there's
at the
no.
flares and stuff on that car. It's
Yeah,
a
that's
dark
really
blue
cool.
red stripe. Yeah, so they had sent that to us when we purchased the car. They were loading it up, and they were like, here's the car, it's on its way, enjoy it.
Wow.
But
Is
yeah,
it
anyway, it was
Ferrari
just
for
cool.
Ferrari 550 above
It looks like there was a Ferrari boat, and that we didn't get that. That I don't know who's
it?
that's big money, or at
The
least
Renault I'm
car.
talking about is the Renault Alpine A110. I don't know if
Yeah.
you've ever seen those, but they are so cool. And of course, there was a Renault 5 Turbo. But yeah, the A110 Alpine or Alpine is one of my favorite cars of all time. I was driving to Vegas one time, and I was going through one of those like the little tiny little towns, like the little Native American towns and indigenous towns, and I saw one sticking out of a garage, like just it, and I mean, it's just It's really a shame because these towns are really run down. Like they're just wrecked cars and buses laying everywhere. The houses are so decrepit, and it's just like you're driving through a big junk pile. It's getting better, but it's been bad for a long time. And I see this little blue A110 sticking out, like the front of it, unmistakable, sticking out like a couple blocks down in front of this driveway. And I went nuts. And it's like, we had to get to Vegas. We're going to SEMA, and we had to get to Vegas. And I'm going, oh my God, like, what's it doing here? Right? What's it doing here? And, by Tonopah or something. And I was on a mission. Every time I drive through that town, now I drive, you got to drive slow anyway, but I'm just scanning, seeing like, was it there? Was it here? Is it this town? Was it the next one? It's like, I should have just put a dot, a mark on the GPS. But all the it was years ago too. So 8 years now, I've been scouring, these little towns I drive through and hoping to see it again, because they made them, and I think they made them in South America for a while, and they're available. But God, they've just skyrocketed. All these old rally cars are just worth so much money now. And I think they made a modern version of the A110. I don't think it made it to the US, but the Renault Alpine is that they reimagined that, and the Lancia Stratos, I think that they reimagined that. And there's some cool stuff out there, man.
Some of those 80s rally cars are like you said, they're starting to pull big money at the auctions, and like Goodwood's been embracing it. They got Rally Off in the Woods, and now we're seeing the car companies, like I think it was last year, LA Auto Show, Hyundai brought out that kind of that EV, but it was like very, it looked like the Audi, and it was very
Oh
rally inspired.
yeah.
And then I just went to Wagon Fest, and Audi brought one of their cars
Wow.
out, one of the vintage racing cars out for that. So
Wow.
it's
Oh yeah,
nice to
the
see
Audi rocked it, man.
they're sort of embracing that as well. Now, I guess if you think of Ken Block's last video, when he had the Audi in Vegas, right? He did his version that had some influence, that rally car influence on it as well,
Oh,
I
of
would say.
course. And do you remember at SEMA, we saw the Mach-E that was all rallied out and had the wide body. It was like semi-overlanding vibe, but much more of a rally vibe. That
Yeah,
thing was gorgeous too.
because the there is a production version of the Mustang Mach-E called the Rally-E, and it's
Oh,
like
I
a
didn't see
it's
that.
got like the cool wheels on it and a little bit of a lift on it, and it's fast too. It was their fastest version up to this point. The
Oh
Rally-E is kind
yeah,
of the cooler one. They kind of changed the
I
suspension stuff.
remember.
Yeah, that's a cool piece. When I saw that in person, I was like, you know what? This thing's kind of awesome, you know?
Yeah, the one at SEMA was this wide body. Oh, here it is. It was kind of tan. Yeah, it was set up more of an overlander, I guess. But it looked so, I don't know, just a wide body. It was so cool looking. But I know there was that. Also, there was that rally inspired electric truck. Was that a Ford too? Remember that real far out looking one?
Yeah, I believe that was.
Yeah, it's a popular, I mean, it's a popular styling thing too, but yeah, there's some cool stuff out there. Love that era. I love that era of rally cars and design, and I'm a big fan.
Let's just take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Okay. Yeah, so you were talking about the Rally E. Yeah, I don't know. They were like 60 grand. They start at 60 grand, the electric versions, but I mean 200 zero to 60 in 3.4 seconds. Like, and it's got a good look to it. Actually, it came out and I was like, this is kind of the most fun version of the Mustang Mach-E if you want something EV. As much as Goldberg doesn't like EV, he was saying the other day, and he's like, getting up that early in the morning and firing up the TRX, so I can do stuff on the property and all the animals awake because it's so loud and the neighbors. And I go, get something electric like the Rally E for the
Yeah, that's
property.
true.
You would never have to leave the property. You could always plug it in, and it's a
Yeah.
fully enclosed because you get so much like weather. Like it'll be 100 degrees and then it'll be icy. It's like, this is something you could tool around with on the property, like a UTV or like a side by side, but without having to
Yeah.
fire anything up and just have it be all electric. And then don't worry about range and stuff because you're just on the
property. Yeah,
because
you're on the property. That's a good point.
You know, and he was like, it's not the worst idea, that's for sure. Yeah. You know, it's certainly
well, Matt,
something
you know,
out
you
there.
Do have good ideas. Unlike
Every once
Brad.
in a while.
Unlike Brad, you've got some really good
Okay, so here, you tell me if this is a good idea or a bad idea. For 2025 BMW M5, new M5, it is 717 horsepower. It's got a plug-in hybrid powertrain. So 717 horsepower, 738 pound-feet of torque, all-wheel drive, 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. But because of this hybrid powertrain, it weighs over 1,000 pounds more than the previous version. The M5 was 4,300 pounds. The new one's 5,390 pounds. I'm not saying it's not going to perform. I'm just saying it as cool as it's going to be, I just don't think that it's going to have some of the characteristics of the M5. Now, I get it. It's not an M3 or what's now is an M4, I guess, or even
Well,
the
the
M2.
M3 is a four-door.
Yeah.
Now the M4 is a two-door. I don't know.
Two
It's all
door.
screwed. This is
So,
a
I mean,
four-door.
it's not meant to be the lighter weight coupe two door, but I know they're going for this like angular styling and stuff. So it's not terrible. I kind of like it. It
No.
doesn't have this
Yeah.
massive
Doesn't have the
kind of
Quala
grill,
nose.
like, yeah, like on the on like the EV SUV, whatever it is, but it's kind of interesting. But you know,
If
to
it, if
add this battery, 14.8 kilowatt battery, which it'll add up to 25 miles of pure EV range.
Yeah.
And you plug it in every night if you want to just plug it in and kind of trickle charge it each night if you have that capability at home. But it's
A
tough
fan
to.
of the hybrids, you know, but I don't know. It's like you're like you said, you're adding weight, but are you getting more economy out of it than weight, you know, to compensate? I don't know.
Well, there's kind of two sides of the equation when you look at hybrid, for example, like this. There's hybrid for the sake of performance, and then there's hybrid for the sake of efficiency. If we're talking Toyota Camry hybrid, yes, you want 50 miles per gallon average
Right.
overall. But if you're talking McLaren P1, you want the performance. You know, we just
Right.
had a discussion about the new Bugatti, which is gorgeous. I don't know if you got a chance to see like the gauges that are in there,
Yes.
but it's like skeleton gauge, like watch,
Yes.
and
Yes.
the steering wheel is it attaches
It's
behind the gauge cluster, so it spins
amazing.
right. It is the most
So
beautiful
cool.
setup I have actually seen. But
Yeah.
that is a V16. It is 1,000 horsepower naturally aspirated engine, and then three electric motors add 800 extra horsepower to 1,800, and I think it's a 9,000 RPM motor. Now, the previous Bugatti, the Chiron, that's like 1,000 horsepower with turbos. This new engine is 1,000 horsepower naturally aspirated. So if you think about it, what they did was they said, hey, for the sake of performance, not efficiency, for performance, we're going to do a hybrid car. We're going to build in these electric motors. And now we can do a high RPM, naturally aspirated engine, in this case, a V16. They got 1,000 horsepower out of it. But the way to do that is they're going to have to spin it up. So, how do you get this car to launch? Because they say 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Well, the way
Wow.
you do it is you fill in the blanks. You fill in that low torque and that turbo lag, which would be turbo lag normally on a turbo car, with turbos, with electric motors,
Electric
right?
motors, yeah.
So now you can get all of this grunt, this low-end torque, instant torque right off the line as your gas engine is winding up, and have that thing launch like a missile. But then you've got that top-end RPM and horsepower to get that top-end speed, that 250 or 270 mile an hour, whatever it is, top-end speed for something like the Bugatti. So if you're using it that way, you're using the electric motors for that low end torque. It's interesting. But look, also, if you get a Toyota Camry and you want 50 miles to the gallon, you know, you get You get the hybrid.
Yeah, I you know, I have to say, I always think of the hybrid in an economy range, you know,
Yeah.
and I forget about all the performance because I can't relate to it. I can't
Yeah, I mean,
relate to the
your
hybrid
dad's
being
La
a performance.
Ferrari
No, but I
that
can't
he's
relate to that
selling.
car. I
Yeah.
can't relate to that stuff. But yeah, of course, for performance, I get it. But still, is it adding? I guess it's adding that much more performance in despite the weight. I mean, it's like, geez, can we come up with a lighter battery here?
Right. So that's the next big evolution, right? Is
That's what everybody's working on currently, by the
more compact, lighter batteries. And
way. Yeah.
that's going to be the thing on EVs. We're going to is how do we start adding lightness, as the old Lotus mantra would be, right? Is add
Right, right, right,
lightness. Is it
right. Without sacrificing quality.
like you want, yeah, like you want to make the battery as lightweight and as efficient as possible, so it takes up less space, adds less weight. But in the meantime, what else do you do to the car to make it even lighter and lighter, to compensate for the battery's weight? And we're getting away with these cars that are kind of still fairly dynamic feeling around a track, because that weight is so spread out, like across the floorboards, if you will, and low. It's kind of holding that car down on the track, and it's not high up
Right.
weight. You know, it's
Yeah,
like,
you have batteries low. And the
yeah.
interesting thing about the hybrids too with the batteries is like you said, placement of that battery is for the weight distribution and things of that nature. It's an interesting tool to have, I would imagine, as a designer, as long as you can fit it somewhere, because you can really put it places to compensate for weight. So it seems that it's filling more gaps than just, you know, the power delivery gaps as well.
Yeah.
It's
There's a
interesting.
couple companies that are.
I have to say that there's some kind of playful ideas of a wagon version, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
The rumored touring M5 wagon. Now that's, you know, I would assume to rival the RS6 or something, you know. That what is it, the RS3 5 and or RS. I think the six is their Avant, their 4-door wagon, 5-door wagon, I guess. But yeah, definitely BMW's got it. You know, BMW does some cool stuff, and they still own the wheel arches. I mean, come on, the way the wheels fit in that wheel opening is like no other. I don't
Yeah.
understand why every car manufacturer hasn't figured it out. BMW's had it for a long time.
You were talking about like the battery and the placement and stuff. Like, if you ever get a chance to look at, and I'll try to share it here while you're here, but the Porsche Taycan,
Oh yeah.
the Porsche Taycan has this massive battery, like under the driver and passenger. But when you get to the back seat, it stops and it has these two like holes, and that's where the rear passenger's feet would go. So
Yeah.
they're able to get that battery as low as possible, but without moving the rear passenger up higher. So the battery stops, and it's basically like these two buckets that your feet would go, so the rear passengers can sit lower and move the overall weight down for better dynamics of that car. So yeah, it's
Yeah.
things like that we're getting kind of creative with.
And that's a battery pack underneath the rear seats too, right? Isn't
Yes,
that
it is. That's the
yeah.
T-shaped battery, and then there's the
Yeah.
other main
Well,
battery. Yeah.
and yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's a neat opportunity, I would think, especially like that too, because you can build a platform and then put a car on top of it. It's a cool concept. I don't know. I'm still wrapping my head around the whole EV thing and the whole electric thing. I don't own electric vehicle. I've a couple bikes and a couple scooters. That's about as electrified as I've gotten, and they're both lacking power and range, and they're all horrible. I love Super 7-3. I love what they're doing, but I don't know. We have the old S1s, the first gens, and they're just junk. I mean, they're just not build quality. Well, build quality too, but yeah, it's just they're worth. I can't even get up the hill on the property. Like I can't get up the hill to like the lookout point, you know. It's
Oh,
on
really?
Super 7-3 won't make it with me on there. Yeah. My high bike will. That thing rips, but that's a hybrid. you know, it's at the crank and you still have to keep momentum. But yeah, the Super 7.3s, I'm sure the newer ones have a little more oomph, but the first gens are first gens. That's what they are.
Yeah. And you know, it's like you said, you haven't experienced it. Like, you know, I've got the Ford Lightning, which you haven't been in. You have to get in there again and go for a ride in that truck or just drive it yourself. But I got the twin turbo Mustang next to it. So I've got a little bit of everything over here.
I'm car jonesing again right now. I mean, we live on a dirt road. Everything is filthy. I can't drive three of my vehicles now. I can't drive the Mini, can't drive the Morgan, can't drive the Defender. They're all because I can't bend my knee enough and push down. I can drive a stick if it was a bit of a reach.
Yeah.
But I can't. I don't trust my knee to push and keep it down, you know, what if I slip and pop the clutch, you know, I can't drive a clutch. So, you know, we basically have Misha's Defender and my big old Jeep, which are hard for me to get in and out of too, because I got to bend my knee so much to get in the door. The Jeep is the hardest one, but the Defender has a pretty big door opening, so I can get into that one a little easier. But, you know, once I get that big one on after surgery, it's going to be really hard for a while. So, you know, it's like, I'm going, well, what can we get or what can I get for the next year of you? Should I lease a car or do something that I can get in and out of a little easier? And I'm thinking, should we look at some hybrid or some electric car just to, you know, so I can experience it. I mean, I'm considering a lot of things right now.
I don't know. That Mach-E Rally is looking cooler and cooler now.
And maybe I'll talk to Ford and see if I can.
You could tear up the dirt and everything out there. Like, you don't have to worry about.
I have nowhere to plug it in unless it's 110. Well, no, I got a 220 outside the generator.
So that's the thing is you want to be able to charge it at home, because using the public network is kind of a nightmare. And it's not like it has to be fully charged all the time. You kind of, you know, like I charge my truck maybe once a week.
I'm in Napa. Everything's 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, literally everything in town is 10, 15 minutes. So I don't need to go far. Just to my PT appointments every couple of days.
here at the warehouse, I think, you know, I had the guys come in and I have 220 outlets here, but for the charger, I think it's about 60 amps at the box, which gets me about 50, you know, about 50 ish amps is the setting on my Ford charger, that my Pro charger that's hung on the wall.
I would think everything here is 30, maybe 50 tops. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't think
and if you can get 50, I don't exactly recall what it is, but it's like 20 or 25 miles of range per hour when I charge it. So if I need to charge it, I can plug it in and I could, you know, I could be here throughout the day, or if you want to charge it overnight, you're good to go. And even at my apartment complex, there's a charger. Everybody kind of shares the chargers. And so sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. And it's much slower than even here. But you know, I can roll in at 30-ish, 40%, throw it on the charger overnight. And in the morning, it's 80, 81%, which is kind of the normal where you want to charge it to. You charge it to 100 if you need it, but the normal is to charge to 80%, supposed to make the battery last longer on the whole thing. You know, so I get up in the morning, I've got 230 miles of range at 80%, and then I'm using it for the week, and I don't have to charge it again for the week unless I plan, I got to go someplace further, you know, but that's about it. It's not the plug-in hybrid with 20 miles of range and you have to plug it in every night. I plug it in once a week.
Well, you know, I was looking, I mean, I know I've said it for years, but those little Fiat 500Es, I'm still looking at them. They're coming down again. You know, there's a couple out there for $5,000 or $6,000, you know, and I'm going, well, they have shitty range, but they're still performance oriented. You know, they're the Abarth version of the interior, so they're pretty well spec'd. So I thought, well, maybe I'll see if I can get in and out of one, because they're so cheap right now. It's like, I could do that because I'm not going very far. It's like, that's the perfect vehicle because I'm not going very far.
Yeah.
And I think you can't plug them in. I don't know the different levels, but you can't plug them in on a fast charger. You can only plug them in on a slow kind of charger. That's one of the downfalls of that little car, is it you can't supercharge them. But, you know, I was looking at those BMW CE for scooters too, because they're kind of long. And I'm like, yeah, I could prop a leg up on that.
You know, I was going to say the BMW i3, the little like,
yes,
little
I like those, but they're so expensive with the extended
range. I mean, they're like 15 grand though. I mean, yeah, there's some used ones that are, 15 grand.
I know. I just have a hard time justifying any cost of something that I'm like, yeah, I guess I could play with that. I do like those i3s. My late friend Nancy Hadley had a little black and white one she called the Panda. And she loved it. She's like, I'm driving the Panda again today. You know, we should meet for lunch. And it's such a cute little car.
The Fiat and the BMW, I just don't know enough about them. I don't know what issues they have or
I'm going 12 minutes down the road. Whatever issue it has, I could hoof it the rest of the way.
Well, not right now.
As long as the AC works. And
yeah. All right, let's say let's wrap things up for let's wrap things
all
up.
Right,
we're kind of out of time here anyway.
did we hit all the marks?
I think we hit it all. Guys, thanks so much for listening. I think we'll get Brad back next week. Hey, you know the plugs, you know where we are on social media. Love to hear from you guys, and those of you that reach out and comment on the shows, appreciate that.
And thanks for listening. I know I have some friends that listen every week because we don't get to see each other, and they listen to the show to catch up a little bit. So thank you all for listening.
You're like, what happened to your knee? I just heard a show. What happened to your knee?
I haven't announced it. This is the first time I publicly mentioned it. It's been, it'll be 3 weeks this Sunday, and I haven't talked about it at all.
Now that your friends that say, what happened to your knee? You can go just listen to the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want, here's a picture. Go listen to the podcast.
Go listen to the podcast. So I have to sit here and type it all out again and again and again, texting you and talking and all that stuff. But, all right. Thanks, buddy. We'll see.
All right, man. All right.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.